we present The High Window by Raymond Chandler. Dramatized for radio by Bill Morrison. Starring Ed Bishop as Philip Marlowe. With Toby Robbins and Tucker McGuire. The High Window. California, 1941.
The house was on Dresden Avenue in Pasadena. A big, solid, cool-looking house with half an acre or so of fine green lawn drifting down to the street. At the door, on a concrete block, was a little painted Negro in white riding breeches and a green jacket and a red cap. He was holding a whip and there was an iron hitching ring in the block at his feet. He looked a little sad, as if he'd been waiting there a long time and was getting discouraged. So I went over and patted his head while I was waiting for somebody to come to the door. A middle-aged maid let me in. It hurt her to have me in her clean house. She took me to a room furnished as an office.
Can I help you? I'm Miss Davis, Mrs. Murdoch's secretary.
I'm Philip Marlowe, calling on Mrs. Elizabeth Bright Murdoch by appointment.
Oh, yes. First of all, Mr. Marlowe... Oh, sit down, please.
Thanks.
First of all, Mrs. Murdoch wanted me to ask you for a few references.
References?
Certainly, references. Does that surprise you?
You mean she hired me as a private detective without knowing anything about me?
She got your name from the manager of a branch of the California Security Bank, but he doesn't know you personally.
Get your pencil ready. A vice president of the same bank, George S. Leake. Then State Senator Houston Oglethorpe. He may be in Sacramento, or he may be at his office in the State Building in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Sidney Dreyfus, Jr. of Dreyfus, Turner & Swain, attorneys in the Title Insurance Building. Got that?
Yeah.
Oliver Fry of the Fry-Krantz Corporation over on East 9th. Then, if you would like a couple of cops, Bernard Oles of the DA's staff, and Detective Lieutenant Carl Randell of the Central Homicide Bureau. You think maybe that would be enough?
Don't laugh at me. I'm only doing what I'm told.
Better not call the last two unless you know what the job is. I'm not laughing at you. Hot, isn't it?
It's not hot for Pasadena. Excuse me.
While she was telephoning hither and yon, I looked her over. Her blondish hair was drawn back so tightly over her narrow head that it almost lost the effect of being hair at all. Her chin looked unstable. The whole face had a sort of off-key neurotic charm that only needed some clever makeup to be striking. She didn't wear any. When she finished her call, she asked me to wait and went out. I went round her desk, looked in the drawers. It wasn't any of my business. I was just curious. It wasn't any of my business that she had a small Colt automatic in the drawer. I shut the drawer and waited to be taken into the presence of Mrs. Murdoch.
Mr. Marlowe, would you come this way?
Mrs. Murdoch reclined on a chaise lounge with a glass of port in her hand and the bottle handy at her elbow. She had a lot of face and chin. She had pewter-colored hair set in a ruthless permanent, a hard beak, and large, moist eyes with a sympathetic expression of wet stones. There was lace at her throat, but it was the kind of throat that would have looked better in a football sweater. She let me stand while she finished her glass and filled it again.
Sit down, Mr. Marlowe. Please do not light that cigarette. I'm asthmatic. I've never had any dealings with private detectives. And what are your charges?
To do what, Mrs. Murdoch?
It's a very confidential matter, naturally.
I charge $25 a day and, of course, expenses.
It seems high.
No, it isn't. I'm just one man and I work at just one case at a time. I take risks. Sometimes quite big risks. And I don't work all the time. Of course, you can get detective work done at any price.
And what is the nature of your expenses?
Well, little things that come up here and there. You never know.
As you prefer to know.
You'll have a chance to object.
And how much retainer would you expect?
$100 would hold me.
I should hope it would.
From people in your position, Mrs. Murdoch, I don't necessarily have to have a retainer.
Mr. Marlowe, I'm a strong-minded woman. But don't let me scare you. Because if you can be scared by me, you won't be much use to me. My asthma. I drink this wine as a medicine. That's why I'm not offering you any.
Sure.
Now, here is the situation. Something of considerable value has been stolen from me. I want it back, but I don't want anybody arrested. The thief happens to be a member of my family by marriage, my daughter-in-law. A charming girl, tough as an oak board. I have a damn fool of a son, but I'm very fond of Leslie. About a year ago, he made an idiotic marriage without my consent. It was foolish of him because he is quite incapable of earning a living, and he has no money except what I give him, and I am not generous with money.
Who is the lady?
A nightclub singer called, appropriately enough, Linda Conquest. They lived here. We didn't quarrel because I don't allow people to quarrel with me in my own house. I pay their expenses. No doubt the lady found life rather dull. No doubt she found my son dull. I find Leslie dull myself. At any rate, she moved out abruptly a week ago without a forwarding address or a goodbye.
And you say she took something?
A coin. A rare gold coin. Called a Brasher Doubloon. The pride of my late husband's collection. It is a mint specimen. Said to be worth over $10,000.
But pretty hard to sell.
I didn't miss the coin until yesterday. I should not have missed it then, as I never go near the collection. Except that a man called Morningstar called up. Said he was a dealer and was the coin for sale. I was curious.
Why?
If the man was a dealer of any repute, he would know that the coin was not for sale. My husband provided in his will that no part of the collection might be removed from this house. I told Mr. Morningstar as much and hung up. Then I went upstairs and found the coin had gone from its locked case.
Just what do you want done?
In the first place, I want the coin back. In the second place, I want an uncontested divorce for my son, and I don't intend to buy it. I dare say you know how these things are arranged.
I may have heard. I'll have to talk to your son.
Leslie knows nothing. Not even that the doubloon has been stolen. I don't want him to know. When the time comes, I'll handle him. He will do exactly what I want him to.
Oh, he hasn't always.
His marriage was momentary impulse.
It takes 3 days to have that kind of impulse in California, Mrs. Murdoch.
Young man, do you want this job or don't you?
If I'm told the facts and allowed to handle the case as I see fit.
This is a delicate family matter. It must be handled with delicacy.
If you hire me, you'll get all the delicacy I have. But I take it you don't want your daughter-in-law framed. I'm not delicate enough for that.
You'll do, Mr. Marlowe.
Well, I'll need a photo of the lady and some information.
In the desk drawer. I know almost nothing about Linda. She once shared an apartment with another entertainer, Lois Magic. They worked together at a place called the Idle Valley Club, owned by a man named Morley, I believe. Leslie knows it far too well. I will ask him if he knows the address of this Lois Magic.
Oh, this lady is quite a looker. One thing, if I find that the lady did not steal the coin, that ends this investigation as far as I'm concerned.
She stole it all right, and I don't intend to let her get away with it. Paste that in your hat, young man. And I hope you are even half as rough as you like to act, because these nightclub girls are apt to have some very nasty friends.
Oh, I like them nasty. The nasty ones have simple minds. I'll report to you when there is anything to report, Mrs. Murdoch.
You don't like me very much, do you?
Does anybody?
Hey, Miss Davis, cheer up. You shouldn't feel sorry for yourself. You should feel sorry for her. She thinks she's tough and she's trying to break her back, trying to live up to it. There's no need to cry.
Oh, don't touch me, please. I never let men touch me. Don't say those things about Mrs. Murdoch. I only want to do my best for her.
Yeah. What do you know about a Miss Lois Magic?
She only came here once with Mr. Vanier.
What does she look like?
Blonde, very, very appealing.
You mean sexy?
Well, in a nice, well-bred sort of way, if you know what I mean.
I know what you mean, but I never got anywhere with it.
I can believe that.
Hmm. Know where Miss Magic lives?
No. Mr. Marlowe, I wouldn't carry that tough guy manner too far if I were you. And I can't answer any more questions. My position here is very confidential.
I'm not tough. Just virile.
Perhaps I don't like virile men.
You're a screwball if ever I met one. As I went out, I patted the little Negro on the head again.
Brother. It's even worse than I expected.
When I left there, I was followed by a small sand-colored toupee with a fat man wearing a pork pie-type straw hat with a tropical print band. I got rid of him and went on down to my two rooms in the Ganga building. The reception room was empty of customers. It was empty of everything but the smell of dust. It had been for too long. I went into my office. Three hard chairs, a swivel chair, desk, five filing cases, three of them full of nothing, a calendar, a framed license, phone, hat rack, carpet, and two open windows with net curtains that puckered in and out like the lips of a toothless old man sleeping. The same stuff I had last year and the year before that. Not beautiful, but better than a tent on the beach.
Come in.
You're Marlowe?
Yeah.
I'm a little disappointed. I rather expected something with dirty fingernails.
Come on in, and you could be witty sitting down.
Thank you.
All set? Pulse and respiration normal? You wouldn't like a cold towel on your head or anything?
A private detective. A shifty business, one gathers. Keyhole peeping, raking up scandal, that sort of thing.
You here on business or just slumming?
My name is Leslie Murdoch. I understand my mother has employed you on a job of some sort.
Has she?
Yes. A little worm told me. Often trodden on, but still somehow surviving, like myself. You were hired to find my wife, aren't you? Marlowe, I'll try very hard, but I don't think I'm going to like you.
I'm screaming with rage and pain.
Why should my mother want Linda found? Why should she pay? My mother hates to spend money. She thinks money is part of her skin.
Who said she did?
But you implied... Merle said...
Merle talks out of turn.
You wouldn't tell Mother... Anyhow, Mother couldn't do without Merle. She has to have somebody to bully. Well, she might yell at her or even slap her face, but she couldn't do without her. Look, Marlowe, please be reasonable and give me an idea what it's all about. Would a couple of hundred make any...
What? I ought to bop you. If a man in my line of work is handed a job, does he go around answering questions about it to anyone that gets curious?
For a man in your line of work to turn down $200, there must be a lot of electricity in the air. Listen, Marlowe, I love my wife. I know she doesn't love me. She hasn't really had a lot of fun being married to me.
You're just too modest.
Maybe it's not Linda. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's Morney.
Maybe it is.
I didn't think Mother knew about that. Did he call her? He promised not to.
Just how much are you into him for?
I owe him $12,000.
What kind of a lad is Morney, tough?
I suppose he is. He used to be in pictures, screen heavy. Linda just sang at his Idle Valley Club, you know. And if you are looking for her, you'll have a hard time finding her.
She's not buried in the backyard, I hope.
Will this show you I'm serious?
You'd better get a bigger gun, Leslie. That thing wouldn't shoot bees.
Get this straight. If anybody tries to push Linda around, he'll have to push me around first.
Tuck the gun back in your garter.
Oh, it's a waste of time talking to you. All you do is wisecrack. I'm going.
Oh, I'll see you out.
Afraid I'll steal your antiques?
I don't think you are worried about your wife. I think you know where she is. She didn't run away from you. She ran away from your mother. Perhaps she'll get a job and make enough money to support you.
You bastard!
If you want to hit somebody, do yourself a favor and pick a midget. An old midget.
Let me go.
How come your old man didn't leave you any money?
If it's any of your rotten business, Jasper Murdoch was not my father. My father was a man named Horace Bright, who lost all his money in the crash and jumped out of his office window. Now, if you're satisfied, I'll be on my way.
I'm doing you a favor. A gun-toter oughtn't to insult so easily. You better ditch it.
I'm sorry I took a swing at you. Probably wouldn't have hurt much if it had connected.
Oh, that's all right.
I was on my way to see Lois Magic, and I was being followed again by the straw hat with the print band. This time he was wearing dark glasses. That made him invisible. He wasn't hard to shake off. A friend of mine at the Chronicle had done a little research. Lois Magic had not long ago become Mrs. Alex Morning, and he had bought a house up in Bel Air, a neighborhood in which nobody walked, not even the postman. The house was modest enough, not more than 14 rooms, and probably only one swimming pool. At the side of the house, a chauffeur, who looked like an overgrown jockey, was washing a Cadillac. According to him, nobody was home. I showed him my card.
A private dick, huh? Has a little old expense account.
Fat with inactivity.
Well, for $5, I could start thinking.
I wouldn't want to make it that tough for you. All I want to know is whether Mrs. Morney is home. Does that rate more than a buck?
You ain't working for Morney, are you?
Sure.
You're a liar.
Sure.
$2.
You have them.
Ah, she's in the backyard with a friend. A nice friend named Vanier. I mean, you get a friend that don't work and a husband that works, you're all set, see?
You'll be all set in an irrigation ditch one of these days.
Not me, Jack. I'm wise. I know how to play him. I monkeyed around these kind of people all my life. Don't worry about lover boy. But watch out for the poodle. Name of Heathcliff.
Wuthering Heights?
Talk English, Jack.
Vanier was the Latin lover type. He and Lois Magic lay out by the pool with the scotch bottle and the ice bucket handy. From 30 feet away, she looked like a lot of class. From 10 feet away, she looked like something made up to be seen from 30 feet away.
Relax, Heathcliff. Hey, go find Kathy.
Heathcliff! Heathcliff, come here at once.
He likes the man. I like what I see, too.
Who the hell are you? What do you mean, busting in here? Weren't you told there was no one in?
Yeah, but I didn't believe it. Are you, Mr. Morning?
No, I'm, just a friend.
Sit down and rest your sex appeal, Lou. Who are you, handsome?
Philip Marlowe. I'm a private detective.
Big, aren't you? Too much for you to handle, I guess, Lou.
All right, Marlowe. Get it over with, whatever it is.
Do I talk to her, or do I talk to you and have you put it in English, huh?
What do you want?
You shared an apartment once with a girl called Linda Conquest. I'm looking for her.
I don't think I've seen her in 6 months. She got married. What do you want to know for, big boy?
Just a private inquiry.
About what?
A confidential matter.
And that gives you the right to bust in here?
So, you don't know where she is, Mrs. Morning?
She just said so.
She said she didn't think she'd seen her.
Who's looking for her?
Her folks.
Guess again. She doesn't have any folks.
Well, you must know her pretty well if you know that.
You got your answer. You're not wanted here.
I think you can tell me where she is, Mrs. Morney, if you want to.
How are you going to make me want to,
With all these people around, how can I?
Well, that's a thought.
Get out, mug, while you can still walk.
Where's your refinement? And don't tell me you wear a gun under your Cesar Romero outfit, or have you got an itch?
Don't light me off too quick. I'd plug you as soon as I'd strike a match. And I'd fix it afterwards.
Don't get so hostile, darling.
Tell him to go.
It would take you a week to get a gat out from under that shirt, if you have one. I'll come back when you're ready. So long, Heathcliff.
When I stopped off at the office on my way downtown to see Mr. Morningstar, the coin dealer, Straw Hat started tailing me again. So I went into a hotel and bought some cigarettes I didn't need and sat down in the lobby. He was right behind me. He was young and pink and plump. He sat down and gave the lobby the benefit of his eagle eye. So I wandered over and sat beside him. Hi.
Yeah? Have I seen you somewhere before?
Only over in Pasadena this morning and now this afternoon.
Oh. I guess I must be lousy.
Boy, you stink.
Maybe it's the hat. It's a pretty tough dollar in this town. You ruin yourself with taxi fares, or if you use your own car, you have to stay too close.
You don't have to climb into the guy's pocket. Did you want something with me?
I figured to find out if you were smart enough to be worth talking to.
I'm very smart. It would be a shame not to talk to you.
That's my card. George Anson Phillips, confidential investigator. I used to be a deputy up at Ventura. I knew you when you were working on the Gregson case 6 years ago. Remember?
No.
Oh. Well, when I saw the guy go into your office, I figured he had hired you.
Which guy?
Leslie Murdoch. I'm working for his wife. I figured we might pool our resources, maybe make a deal.
Divorce?
So she says. But I wonder. I don't like it. Can we talk?
No, I have an appointment now.
Come to my apartment after. I'll write it down. It's Court Street. On Bunker Hill. Sorry, I haven't been in the chips lately. Listen. A very tall guy has been tailing me. Well, not now, though. Anything to do with you?
No. Just to make sure. Your client, she's a tall blonde with careless eyes, huh?
I wouldn't call them careless.
And just between the two of us, this divorce stuff is a lot of hooey. It's something else, isn't it?
Something I don't like more every minute I think about it. Here. Don't wait around if I'm out. This is the key to my place. What time will you be there?
About 4:30. You sure you want to give me this key?
Well, why not? We're in the same racket.
Yeah. So we are. The Belfont building, where Morningstar had his office, had only one elevator working. In it sat an old man on a piece of burlap folded on top of a wooden stool. He looked as if he had been sitting there since the Civil War and had come out of that badly.
Okay, Pop.
I hear in New York they got elevators that just whiz. Do 20 floors at a time. That's New York.
Ah, the hell with New York. I like it here.
Must take a good man to run them fast babies.
All those cuties do is push buttons. I would take a Model T job like this. Takes a man to run it.
Yeah. Morningstar. At the back.
Thanks for your help, Pop. Keep breathing.
What can I do for you, Mr. Marlowe?
Tell me about the Brasher doubloon, Mr. Morningstar.
It's an interesting coin. Among the most valuable of early American coins. It's gold, about the size of a half dollar. Made for the state of New York in 1787. It was not minted. There were no mints till 1793, so it was pressure molded by a private goldsmith named Ephraim Brasher, or Brashear.
What's the pressure molding process?
Well, the two halves of the mold were engraved in steel, mounted in lead, and a gold blank pressed between them.
Slow process.
And not exact. Always slight variations. So it would be safe to say, by modern methods of microscopic identification, no two coins would be identical.
How many of these coins are there?
Nobody knows. Perhaps 1,000. But very few in mint condition. They're the valuable ones.
How valuable?
Handled by a reputable dealer with a history of the coin, $10,000.
And without history?
Rare coins do turn up in odd places, but not often. With the coin you mentioned, the implication of theft would be strong. That's $5, please.
Huh?
Well, don't be absurd, Mr. Marlowe. Everything I've told you is available in the public library. Now, you've taken up my time relating it to you. Then that's $5.
Okay, $5. There you are. Now, Mr. Morningstar, let's talk about the Brasher doubloon that somebody tried to sell you.
Oh? Did somebody? And why would they want to do that?
They needed the money. They knew your office was in a shabby dump at the end of a corridor, and you were an elderly man who would probably not make any false moves out of regard for your health.
And you assume all this from the mere fact that I telephoned Mrs. Murdoch and asked if her Brasher doubloon was for sale?
You knew it wasn't for sale. You would know the Murdoch collection and the terms of the will. But when it was offered to you, you wanted to buy it.
Why?
As a reputable dealer, you would be protecting the owner or her insurance from complete loss of the stolen item, and they'd gladly pay you for the favor of getting it back.
How much would the owner pay?
$1,000? What did you pay?
$800. For a mint uncirculated Brasher doubloon, $800. you're a very smart young man.
Yeah. Let's have the coin.
Do you take me for a fool? It's not my office. Come back at 11 tomorrow with the money. Have it in used bills. Used 20s will do. An occasional 50 will do no harm.
What did she look like?
Who?
The girl who sold you the coin.
Oh, well, he was middle-aged. Heavy set, 5'7", about 170 pounds. Said his name was Smith. Blue suit, green shirt, no hat, brown handkerchief in his outer pocket, hair dark. A scar 2 inches long down the side of his jaw. Left side.
What about the hole in his right sock?
I omitted to take his shoes off.
Damn careless of you.
Don't think that I don't know how to protect myself, Mr. Morrow.
I hope you do, because what you're handling is dynamite. I left Morningstar smiling. What I did next was a cheap trick, a sucker play. But it worked because his secretary was out. I tramped off and then sneaked back into his outer office and listened on her extension. He called a Mr. Anson in Court Street, Bunker Hill, who wasn't in. The same Court Street where lived the pink and innocent George Anson Phillips, who had been hired by a tall blonde, when in her picture, Linda Conquest had dark hair, and who had given me his key because he was worried and wanted to see me. Court Street.
Classic baseball, but it's
a
good
baseball.
The couple across the hall from Phillips' apartment were enjoying themselves. They hadn't seen me. They didn't know what day of the week it was. I felt sick. The apartment had seemed empty till I pushed at the bathroom door, which stuck. And then I smelled the smell. Phillips was crumbled up and jammed into the little room. He had a bloody bruise on the right side of his head, and his mouth was full of blood. I kept smelling the cordite fumes. I rubbed off any prints of mine and got out. There was nothing for me here. I was a fool, even to look at the manager's sign. I should have got out.
Yeah? What you want?
Anson, room 204 upstairs. He's not in.
What should I do? Lay an egg? Beat it. Drift.
$5.
Look, I run a nice, respectable place here. Who are you?
That's my card.
Pollock. Insurance. I didn't figure Anson for no crook. Hell, I come in all shapes and sizes. Don't have been here a month. If it looked like a wrong G, wouldn't have been here at all.
What say we frisk the apartment while he's out?
Mr. Palermo wouldn't like it.
Who's he?
He owns the building, a lot of others. In fact, he owns the district. It's the vote out, you know. Not a guy to crowd.
Okay. Let's go up and frisk the apartment.
Don't get me sore at you.
That would bother me like 2 cents of nothing. Let's go up and frisk the apartment.
You said something about a five?
That was hours ago. Let's go up and frisk the apartment.
Look, I was sitting here having myself a beer or two or nine, what the hell. I wasn't bothering anybody. Looked like it might be a nice evening. And then you come in.
Let's go up and frisk the apartment.
It's the only way to get you out of here. Let's go.
Down. Too much racket. Next time I call the law.
Hey, Hans.
What?
The guy says to pipe down. Do you want to stalk him?
Hey, you. Bod's off. I just come in from lunch. I had a lousy lunch. I wouldn't want nobody to push muscle at me.
You heard me, Hench. Dim that radio and make it sudden.
Why?
Very neat with the blackjack.
Why, thank you.
He's going for a gun under his pillow.
Yeah, I can fade that, too.
Fast draw.
Thank you.
Hey.
Drop the gun, Hench.
Hey, this ain't my gun. Mine's a Colt 32. This ain't my gun. Look, look.
Allow me.
Go ahead.
Let's see it.
This ain't my gun.
This has been fired recently.
That's an automatic. It ain't my gun.
A shot has been fired from this, and there's a dead man across the hall.
What?
Better get some law.
Phillips was shot in the throat with a medium-caliber gun and a soft-nose bullet. A gun like this and bullets like is in here. Now tell me again, Hench.
Lieutenant, it ain't my gun.
Then how did it get under your pillow?
We went out about 3:30 to get something to eat. You can check that at the hash house. We must have left the door unlocked.
Tell me about the gun.
I had a gun, yeah, but it was a revolver, not an automatic. It had a piece broken off the rubber grip. Somebody swiped my gun and left that one. You gotta believe me.
You saw him take this gun from under the pillow, Marlowe?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Hanson. Now, say the radio killed the noise of the shot, and you had left your door open. The killer hears you go out.
Yeah.
And he wants to ditch the gun, so he walks into your apartment and slips it under your pillow. And then, imagine his surprise, he finds another gun, your gun, there waiting for him.
The one with the broken grip, yeah.
So he swaps. Now, why, huh? Why take the risk? Why the fancy pants?
You don't have any boys who can bounce me hard enough to make me tell it different. I need a drink. I need a drink bad. Oh, jeez, I wish I could remember better.
Well, we're going to have to hold you until we trace your gun. Lieutenant Spangler will take you downtown.
Hey, get on it, babe. We got to take a ride.
Huh?
She needs a drink.
Let's go.
Come on, babe.
Oh, you bum.
Yeah.
Let's go.
All right.
Well, you and me, Marlowe, are going to get along.
Oh, that's fine, Lieutenant.
Jesse's the name. Jesse Breeze. Look, I haven't taken a sudden fancy to you. It's the way I work. Everything quiet, everything in the clear.
You don't think he shot Phillips?
Look, I just got here. What's the idea of using the name Pollock?
Well, in a neighborhood like this, it's bad form to use your own name.
And why come here at all? What do you know about the dead guy?
I told you.
Look, you don't have to be stuck with it. You could always give us a better story. Okay, he follows you, you brace him, and as a result of this little lobby conversation, this guy, a total stranger to you, asks you to his apartment and hands you his key because he wants to talk to you.
Yes.
Why couldn't he talk to you then?
I had a business appointment.
Just, what are you working on?
I can't tell you.
Look, this is a murder case. You're going to have to tell me.
I'm sorry, Breeze. I'm not convinced of that yet.
You know I can throw you in the can as a material witness?
Are you going to do it?
Why don't you go home and let a man work, huh? But don't leave town. We'll want a statement. Maybe tonight.
It was 6:45 when I let myself into my office and found the package. I poured myself a drink and sat there holding the neck of the cool bottle, wondering how it would feel to be a homicide dick and find bodies lying around and not mind at all. Not have to sneak out wiping doorknobs. Not have to ponder how much I could tell without hurting a client and how little I could tell without too badly hurting myself. I decided I wouldn't like it. The package had my name and address neatly hand-printed in ink. It was a cardboard box full of cotton wool, and inside that, a bright gold coin about the size of a half dollar. The date was 1787, and in small letters at the bottom of one side was the name Brasher. I was looking at the Brasher doubloon. There was no note with it, nothing. I slipped it down with the tobacco in my pouch, got a shoulder holster out of my desk, and strapped on a Colt 38 automatic, and was ready to leave.
Dog's residence?
Merle, you oughtn't to have told him.
Who?
Your friend, Leslie. You shouldn't have told him. She hired me.
How dare you suggest that, Mr. Marlowe?
Let me talk to Mrs. Murdoch.
Where are you?
In a drugstore, in a very hot phone booth.
Wait a moment.
I need air.
This is Mrs. Murdoch.
Mrs. Murdoch, could you identify the doubloon?
I suppose so. I don't know.
The dealer, Morningstar, claims to have seen it. I'm going to call on him now. He says it was offered to him for sale, just as you suspected.
I see.
He won't say who offered it, but it may have been a fellow called George Anson Phillips, who claims to be a private eye. Do you know him?
Why should I? Get to the point, Marlowe.
I've agreed to pay $1,000 for the return of the article, if you want me to do that.
This is all very unnecessary now, Marlowe. You see, the coin has been returned to me.
What? Hold the wire.
What is going on?
A rat was gnawing my foot, that's all. You got it back. How?
I may explain, and I may not. You may call on me tomorrow. The investigation is closed.
Things have happened, Mrs. Murdoch.
Tell me tomorrow. Goodbye.
You all right, sir?
A double scotch on the rocks, no ice.
This is a drugstore, sir, not a bar.
Huh? Oh, yeah, so it is. I mean, so it isn't. I've had a shock, pal. Give me a cup of weak coffee and a thin ham sandwich on stale bread. No, I better not eat yet either. Goodbye.
Hollywood's full of them.
I was sitting at home over a chess problem with a drink at my elbow and nothing on my mind, except two murders. Morningstar was dead when I got to his office. He had been hit on the head and the violet color of his face showed that he had died of a heart stoppage, but that didn't make it any less murder. So I wiped the doorknobs, walked back past the dental technicians and the typewriting service, and hoped the old elevator man was as vacant as he looked. And then I called the receiving hospital, giving no name. Then I hocked the doubloon I'd been sent in a pawn shop for safekeeping, wondering all the time how Mrs. Murdoch had got it back while I had it in my pocket, and why two men had to die, and I had to find them and go home. What brings you here, Lieutenant?
Take a look around, Spangler.
Yes, sir.
Close the door, Marlowe.
There's nobody here. I live alone.
You don't mind if we look? Spangler?
Nobody here.
Satisfied? Let me show you out.
We didn't come here to get tough, Marlowe.
Oh, that's fine. So you prowl all around my apartment without asking my permission. What do you do when you get tough? Knock me down and kick me?
Murder ain't funny, Marlowe.
Who said it was?
You play a lot of chess?
That's just a game I've set out. Once in a while, I fool around with a game, thinking things out.
And don't it take two guys to play chess?
I play over tournament games that have been recorded and published. There's a whole literature about chess. Once in a while, I work out problems. Well, you may as well sit down.
Oh, thanks. I did a little checking about you. Lieutenant Randall tells me you're on the level.
Oh, that's friendly of him.
He says you make good coffee and you get up kind of late and are apt to run to a very bright line of chatter. And that we should believe anything you say, provided we can check it by five independent witnesses. You know, I like everything in the clear. That's why I'm telling you. I just hope you've told me everything.
Why should I? You don't pay my salary.
Don't get tough.
I don't have any idea of being tough.
Let's talk about murder. Huh?
Okay.
The murder of...
George Anson Phillips.
And?
That's our murder.
Now, you said you didn't know why he wanted to see you. Now, we figured that maybe with time to think back, you could remember.
In other words, I was lying.
We just want you to make sense.
Why give the manager a phony card and get him to go up with you when you've already found the body?
It pays to be cagey in those places. I thought he might know something, that's all.
We know Phillips was on a job as a private dick. Like you, you're on a job. Now, if those jobs tie up, that's our business.
Now, don't forget, this is a murder case.
I've been around this town more than 15 years. I've seen murder cases come and go. Some have been solved. Some couldn't be solved. And some could have been solved that were not solved. And one or two, or three, have been solved wrong. Maybe you've forgotten the Cassidy case.
Look, I'm tired. Let's stick to the Phillips case.
I'm going to make a point, and it's an important point. Cassidy was a very rich man, a multimillionaire. He had a grown-up son. One night, the cops were called to his home. Young Cassidy was on his back with a bullet hole in the side of his head, and his male secretary was lying in the adjoining bathroom with a gun by his right hand. He, too, had been shot in the head, but it was not a contact wound. A lot of drinking had been done. 4 hours had elapsed since the death, and the family doctor called in by the father had been there for 3 of those hours. Now, what did the cops do with the Cassidy case?
Murder and suicide during a drinking spree. The secretary went haywire and shot young Cassidy. Is that what you want me to say?
That's what the paper said. But the cops knew it wasn't so, and the DA knew, and the DA's investigators were pulled off the case. Everybody knew young Cassidy was the one who was crazy drunk, that the secretary tried to handle him and couldn't, and that Cassidy did the shooting, then shot himself. Cassidy's was the contact wound. And what were Rich Daddy and the family doctor doing for those 4 hours they didn't call the cops? Why were no tests made on the hands? Because you didn't want the truth. Cassidy was too big, but this was a murder case too, wasn't it?
The guys were both dead. What the hell difference does it make? Who shot who?
Did you ever stop and think that the secretary might have had a mother or a sister or a sweetheart? That they had their pride and their faith and their love for a kid who was made out to be a drunken, paranoid killer just because his boss had $100 million? What difference does it make?
Make your point.
Until you guys own your own souls, you don't own mine. Until you guys can be trusted every time and always, in all times and conditions, to seek the truth and find it and let the chips fall where they may, until that time comes, I have a right to listen to my conscience and protect my client the best way I can. Until I'm sure you won't do him more harm than you do the truth good. Or until I'm hauled before somebody who can make me talk.
You sound to me just a little like a guy who is trying to hold his conscience down.
I'll leave it. Let's have a drink.
Well, this one won't do no harm. Spangler, get some ice for the man.
Hey, say, I'd like to read up on that Cassidy case. Sounds interesting. Must have been before my time.
It never happened.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Oh. I'll get the ice.
What did you find out about Phillips' background?
Kind of a pathetic case, that kid. The sheriff up at Ventura said he did what they told him to do, and he'd do it pretty well, provided they told him which foot to start on and how many steps to take which way and little things like that. But he didn't develop much, if you get what I mean. So the sheriff let George go. He knocked around for a while, had a few jobs, and came to L.A., got a license, and put a private eye ad in the paper. He must have got a customer because he suddenly took that apartment under the name of Anson. And the next he knew, he got bumped off.